Welcome to the Dementia in Commercial Real Estate podcast. Set in a medical environment specifically designed to address issues within the commercial property sector. Written by commercial real estate and hotel investment advisor Priyanshu Priyadathakar and presented by Sarah Mitchell and Ethan Rogers, who operate from a central nursing station. By adopting a medical metaphor, Pri examines the complexities and potential declines within this specific market niche.
Welcome to the night shift. Pull up a chair to the nursing station, pour yourself some of that, well, terrible Burt break room coffee, and settle in.
Yeah, you're going to need the coffee for this one.
You really are.
Uh-huh.
So you are joining us on the floor of a very specific, very high security psychiatric ward.
It's pretty quiet right now.
Right, just the hum of the fluorescent lights.
Yeah.
But the patients here, I mean, they aren't your typical demographic.
No, definitely not.
You won't find anyone claiming to be Napoleon or anything like that. No, the patients wandering these halls in hospital gowns, you know, muttering to themselves, they are the former titans of the commercial real estate industry.
It really is a fascinating, if entirely depressing, clinical environment.
Yeah.
I mean, we are looking at individuals who just a few short years ago were moving hundreds of millions of dollars. They were the masters of the universe.
Untouchable.
Exactly. And now they are suffering from a collective industry-wide break from reality. We are observing a profound systemic cognitive decline.
And our mission for this deep dive is to review a highly specific late-night clinical diagnostic report. This was filed in June of 2026.
So we are here to observe an autopsy, basically.
Yes, but not of a physical body. It's the autopsy of a market delusion, which brings us to our newest admission.
Ah, the agitated patient.
Right. We'll keep their name out of it to maintain clinical confidentiality, obviously. But this is a managing partner of an investment group specializing in Class B suburban office and Midwest flex industrial properties.
A very specific, very painful sector to be in right now.
Oh, absolutely brutal. And if you look at the chart, their daily vitals are just absolutely degrading.
And honestly, the only reason we even have an accurate read on these vitals is because of the lead investigator on this case.
We really need to introduce Priyanshu Adathakar here.
Yeah, Priyanshu to his colleagues. He essentially serves as the chief of surgery at the CRE clinic.
Right.
And while the rest of the commercial real estate market is out there cheerfully polishing their fictional pro formas, you know, hallucinating this golden age return to 2021 valuations.
Which is mathematically impossible, by the way.
Completely impossible. But while they do that, Pri is essentially the only reality-grounded professional left in the building. He is the sole reporter diligently documenting this cognitive decline in leadership.
He really is the lone voice of reason in a sea of recurring delusions.
Yeah, it's bleak.
So let's open Pri's file on this managing partner. We start with the diagnosis. The patient is suffering from acute professional rust out and stagnation-induced lethargy.
Rust out, not burnout. That's a key difference.
Exactly. But to really understand why this patient is wandering the halls in a stupor, we have to look at the toxic, low-velocity environment they're trapped in.
Right, the external factor.
Because this isn't like the high adrenaline panic of the 2023 rate shocks. That was a heart attack. This is something much slower.
That's a crucial clinical distinction. I mean, in 2023, the market was on fire.
Right.
And when there's a fire, your adrenaline spikes. You are in active crisis management mode. It's exhausting, yes, but you are physically doing something.
You're running around with buckets of water.
Exactly. But what pre-identifies in the patient's chart now, in 2026, is an environment entirely devoid of that velocity. It is an economic fog.
Yeah.
The fires are out, but the smoke is so thick you literally cannot move.
And it manifests first in what Pri calls the pathology of the inbox.
Oh, this part is just tragic.
It really is. The daily operational cycle has devolved into this soul-crushing, monotonous loop. The patient's digital pipeline, their email inbox, their deal flow is a graveyard.
Just completely dead.
Right. It is filled with uninspired, half-baked deal sheets because the bid-ask spread is a chasm that just cannot be crossed.
Sellers are trapped in a profound psychological delusion,
clinging to 2021 valuations as if they were a religious dogma,
while buyers are exclusively hunting for distressed blood.
So the patient spends their entire day deploying boilerplate pushback to repetitive inquiries. It's just endless.
But we need to look at the mechanical reality of why that inbox is a graveyard. It's not just stubbornness. It's structural gridlock. The buyers are demanding 2026 pricing, which reflects the current cost of capital.
Because debt is expensive now.
Right. But the sellers cannot accept that pricing because doing so would wipe out their entire equity position.
So the patient just sits at their desk, typing the word no 100 different ways, achieving absolutely zero structural progress.
Which feeds perfectly into the Tuesday ritual.
Oh, the special servicer loop.
Yes. Every Tuesday, the patient enters this high-friction, low-yield modification cycle with lenders and special servicers.
The lenders sit in these meetings, tweaking debt yield covenants by mere fractions of a percent.
Pushing the maturity wall out another 6 months.
But never, ever fixing the underlying capital architecture.
It is the 2026 iteration of extend and pretend. And again, if we look at the mechanics, there is a very clinical reason why the lenders are participating in this shared hallucination.
And they're terrified.
Exactly. The senior lenders don't want to foreclose because taking the keys to a half-empty suburban office building means they have to mark that asset to market on their own balance sheets.
And doing that destroys their capital reserves.
Right. Meanwhile, the mezzanine debt holders, the guys sitting in the middle of the capital stack, they are already mathematically wiped out.
But no one wants to write the obituary.
No. Okay. So everyone just agrees to reschedule the doom.
Well, as Pramer's notes in the patient's chart, this behavior is systemic. But if we pull back, I have to offer a slightly darker analogy here.
Go for it.
Watching these highly paid professionals tweak a covenant by a fraction of a percent just to avoid recognizing a loss, it's like putting a polite, flesh-colored Band-Aid on a corpse.
That is dark, but accurate.
Right. You're meticulously smoothing out the suit for the open casket, but the patient has been dead for 2 years. Why is this market suffering from such profound institutional amnesia? Why won't anyone just look at the body?
Because looking at the body means accepting that the equity and all the performance fees tied to it are completely gone.
Avoidance is a powerful drug.
It's a numbing drug. Acknowledging the truth means acknowledging that the magic beans of a market recovery aren't real.
Which is why Pri is so vital here.
Exactly. He is the sole authority willing to slice open the deal, look at the necrotic tissue, and state clearly, this is dead.
Because the rest of the market is heavily financially incentivized to pretend the corpse is just taking a nap.
Well, let's talk about the toll that takes. Keeping up that level of denial requires immense energy.
It does. How does this disease actually manifest in the patient's daily behavior? Because Pri's notes here are just brutal.
He calls it the idling engine. The patient arrives mechanically at their desk at 7:30 in the morning every single day.
The suit is on, the coffee is hot.
But the entrepreneurial spark, the risk-taking, the wealth creation that defined their entire career, it is entirely gone.
Replaced by a heavy, clock-punching inertia.
The patient actually self-identifies in the notes with this dark, cynical detachment.
Yeah, they call themselves a highly paid babysitter for empty concrete.
It's so bleak.
And what really strikes me is the neurotic compulsion Pri documents here. The patient exhibits this compulsive tendency to open underwriting spreadsheets and just tweak exit cap rates by 10 basis points.
Up, down, up, down.
Right. They are fully aware that it is a completely academic exercise because there are no buyers.
No counterparty is pulling the trigger.
Exactly.
We really need to connect this to human behavior. It's the illusion of control in an uncontrollable environment.
Absolutely. I mean, we've all done a version of this, right?
Sure.
Think about you, the listener at home, hitting refresh on a package tracking page for a delayed delivery, or endlessly reorganizing your desktop folders just to feel productive.
You aren't actually moving the needle.
Right. But your brain craves the sensation of task completion.
Yeah.
The stakes here are just hundreds of millions of dollars higher.
And you see that same degradation in what the patient now considers a win, the triage of the mundane.
Yeah.
A few years ago, this patient was engineering highly complex joint ventures. They were executing massive 1031 tax-deferred exchanges.
And today?
Their major weekly operational victory was renegotiating a janitorial contract.
I have to read this specific detail from Pri's notes because it is so absurd. Pri literally notes that this managing partner, a titan of industry, spent 3 hours on a Tuesday arguing with a vendor over the ply count of the toilet paper.
Unbelievable.
Two ply versus one ply for a 120,000 square foot building that currently houses exactly four people.
Four people.
A three-person regional accounting firm and one very depressed mortgage broker. They saved maybe $80 for the quarter and called it a strategic win.
The scope of their ambition has collapsed to the size of a utility closet.
Pry's boots-on-the-ground diagnosis of this delusion paints a very specific picture. But I have to push back here.
Okay.
Is this compulsive spreadsheet tweaking, this three-hour debate over toilet paper,
yep,
is that actually a viable defensive business strategy in a down market? Or is it purely a sophisticated self-soothing mechanism to avoid staring into the abyss?
Oh, it is entirely a self-soothing mechanism. Pry diagnoses it as stalemate management.
Stalemate management.
Right. Think of it like a severe financial autoimmune disease. The operator's corporate body is spending 90% of its daily energy, its operational bandwidth, attacking a localized chronic infection.
Because they're so hyper-focused on triaging this one sick asset.
Exactly. They have absolutely zero white blood cells left to go out and hunt for new healthy investments. They are biologically trapped by their own portfolio.
Okay, so the abstract delusion is shattered, and we know they are suffering from an autoimmune response?
Yes.
But identifying the general symptoms doesn't cure the patient.
Yeah.
What is the actual physical tumor causing this systemic lethargy?
Priya isolates it with surgical precision. The root cause is a specific asset anchoring their portfolio, Oak Ridge Corporate Center.
Oak Ridge. Just the name sounds like beige carpeting, flickering fluorescent tubes, and soul-crushing drop ceilings.
It really is the architectural embodiment of a slow bleed. And here is the critical clinical insight Priya makes from. Oak Ridge is not a catastrophic sudden loss.
Which makes it worse.
Exactly. If the building had structural failure or if the bank just seized it overnight, it would be traumatic, but it would be clean. The patient could write it off, process the grief, and move on.
But it doesn't burn down. It's a parasite.
Exactly.
And that's how Pry saw the symptoms before the family portfolio was traded away.
Yeah.
He recognizes this slow bleed as infinitely more dangerous than a quick death.
Because Oak Ridge demands just enough daily administrative triage to keep the patient completely hostage.
A minor roof leak over an empty suite. A fractional insurance premium adjustment.
It occupies all their operational bandwidth.
So the obvious question, if you have a necrotic limb that is slowly poisoning your entire corporate body, why doesn't the patient simply amputate? Just hand the keys back to the bank and walk away.
Because of the prevailing market psychology, the patient refuses to amputate because they are addicted to the false hope of the macro rescue.
The idea that the cavalry is always just over the next hill.
Exactly. The industry echo chamber has been promising sweeping, dramatic interest rate cuts for years now.
Oh, the Fed pivot.
Right. They believe the Federal Reserve is going to swoop in like a medical evac helicopter, drop rates by 200 basis points, and magically save their equity.
But let's look at the mechanics of why that is a complete hallucination.
Life.
Even if the Fed drops rates, the intrinsic demand for legacy Class B suburban office space is fundamentally gone. You cannot solve a structural tenant demand crisis with a monetary policy band-aid.
You really can't.
Pry is the only observer recognizing the cold clinical truth. You cannot wait for a time machine to take you back to 2019. The macro rescue is a hallucination.
All right, so if the macro rescue medevac isn't coming, how does Pry practically force a tracked operator to amputate without bankrupting their entire fund? How do you treat an ego that refuses to accept the math?
It's essentially an intervention.
This is where Pry earns his title as chief of surgery. He implements a brutal, reality-grounded treatment plan using what he calls his ethical cowboy framework.
Ethical cowboy.
I
like that.
It requires immense clinical bravery to tell a patient exactly what they desperately do not want to hear. The very first step is introducing immediate strategic friction.
To break the autoimmune cycle.
Yes. The patient must immediately cease executing administrative paper shuffling, refuse the Tuesday servicer meetings if they are just going to extend and pretend, stop arguing over the toilet paper.
You force the issue. As that forbearance window ticks down this 12-month clock, Pry forces a hard pivot.
A clinical binary choice.
Right. There's no option C where you just keep babysitting the empty concrete. So option A, Pry calls this the adaptive reuse sprint.
Okay, so a total transformation.
Yes. You pivot entirely away from the delusion of office tenancy, and you underwrite a radical conversion framework, hotel to housing or office to workforce housing. You fundamentally change the DNA of the asset.
You take that manic energy you were wasting on janitorial contracts, and you deploy it into structural transformation.
But wait, hold on. Adaptive reuse sounds great in a press release, but let's talk about the reality here.
It's not easy.
Retrofitting plumbing and residential zoning for a 1990s suburban office box is astronomically expensive.
Extremely.
Office buildings have their plumbing clustered in the central core near the elevators. Apartments need plumbing in every single unit running around the perimeter.
Right. You have to trench through concrete floors just to lay the pipes.
Which destroys your yield.
Yeah.
So isn't pivoting to adaptive reuse just swapping one dilution for a significantly more expensive one?
It absolutely can be. And Pre acknowledges the incredibly high failure rate of those conversions. That's why option A is it's a stress test.
Okay.
You run the math, you look at the concrete trenching costs, and if the numbers don't immediately pencil out, you do not force it, which pushes the patient directly into option B, capital liquidation.
The amputation.
Yes. You mandate an immediate sale of Oak Ridge Corporate Center at a realistic blood-in-the-streets market loss.
You just take the hit. You realize the losses you've been hiding from your investors.
You take the hit. It is incredibly painful to the ego. It will look terrible on a spreadsheet for that quarter.
But mechanically?
Mechanically, it cleanly severs the capital-sucking anchor. It permanently eliminates the extend and pretend feedback loop with the special servicer.
And most importantly, it completely frees up the patient's mental bandwidth, the brain of the deal, to focus on the reality of the 2026 economic environment. I think this is the core of Pri's reverse psychology, and it's brilliant.
It really is.
The entire industry is obsessed with protecting the internal rate of return, the IRR, on paper. They will lie, they will extend, they will hallucinate just to keep that number looking positive on a PDF.
They're treating the spreadsheet, not the patient.
Exactly. But Pri is saying the actual cure is accepting that the investment is dead. You take the painful ego hit to protect the operator, not the spreadsheet.
Because the alternative is fatal. In Pri's notes, there is a severe compliance warning regarding the physiological effects of this delusion.
What happens if they don't liquidate?
Prolonged exposure to extend and pretend paper loops causes severe asset calcification.
Calcification.
Yes. The building rots physically, the capital drains mechanically, and the operator suffers a total loss of market relevance.
So by the time they finally admit defeat in year 3 or 4, they have no capital.
And worse, no energy left to deploy into new distressed opportunities.
They survived the disease, but the treatment killed their career.
Precisely. Pri is protecting their future ability to operate in the market by killing their current delusion today.
So as we close the patient file and dim the lights at the nursing desk, we have to turn this back to you listening right now.
Look at your own professional life.
Right. Your own portfolio, whatever that may be. We all have things we hold on to longer than we should. Are you running your engine at high RPMs in deep economic mud?
Are you nursing an Oak Ridge corporate center of your own?
A slow, capital-sucking, energy-draining anchor, just hoping some magical macro rescue will save you from having to make a hard, painful pivot.
It's a vital diagnostic question for anyone managing assets or running a business right now.
It really is.
Because here is a final, rather chilling thought to consider as we look down these ward hallways. If this entire commercial real estate market is surviving on a shared psychiatric hallucination of extend and pretend,
yeah.
What exactly happens the moment all these 12-month forbearance windows expire simultaneously?
Oh, man. Systemic shock.
Exactly. What happens when the music actually stops? The mezzanine lenders realize they're entirely wiped out. The senior lenders are forced to take the keys and mark their books to market. And there aren't nearly enough reality-grounded professionals like Pri around to perform the triage.
The ward is going to get very, very crowded.
It certainly is.
End of shift. We'll see you next time.
Before you close your app, do us a quick favor. Rate and review the show. It takes 5 seconds, but it directly supports what we do here. Want to get these insights delivered straight to your inbox before anyone else? Head over to bearinvestors.com and join our inner circle today. See you on the next episode.